It's Wisconsin Today. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Kate Archer-Kent. U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement released its latest batch of nationwide detention statistics this week.
Congress requires the Department of Homeland Security to release data on immigration detention every 2 weeks, but this is the first time they've done so in months.
An investigative data reporter with the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel analyzed the numbers for Wisconsin. She found that ICE is detaining more people in Wisconsin jails, and most of the people detained have no criminal convictions.
For more on her reporting, Eva Wen joins us now. Eva, welcome to Wisconsin Today.
Thank you for having me.
You found an increase in the number of people ICE is detaining in Wisconsin jails. How big an increase did you see?
Yeah, so before we dive into the numbers, it's important to note that these are average daily populations in detention centers in Wisconsin, not the total number of people ICE has detained through the year. So given that, on a given day, there were around 115 from 2023 to 2025, but close to 150 in 2026. So that's about a 25% increase.
And according to the data, more than half the people detained in Wisconsin have no convictions. How do we see that trend comparing to previous years?
Yeah, so there are about 60% of people held in detention in Wisconsin that don't have criminal records. That's actually the case under both Trump and Biden administration over Biden's past last 2 years of his presidency, barring the pandemic. So that is somewhat interesting because, you know, the arrest numbers show that Trump administration is arresting a lot more people without criminal convictions. However, many of these people arrested are being sent under Trump to other states, detention centers in other states, so they may not show up in the data in Wisconsin.
And ICE detainees who are not sent to detention centers out of state are held in a handful of Wisconsin jails that have entered into an agreement with the federal government. What have we seen change there over the last couple of years when it comes to how many and which Wisconsin facilities are detaining people?
Yeah, so from 2020 to 2024, it used to be just Dodge County Jail. That was the only county jail that was holding immigrant detainees for ICE. But now, since the beginning of the Trump administration, we have seen three other county jails joining that. That includes Douglas County Jail, which is near the border with Minnesota, Waukesha County Jail, and Sauk County Jail.
You also published an analysis of tactics used by ICE agents in a major immigration crackdown at the end of June, looking at videos taken by bystanders. What kind of things did you find out?
Yeah, so in some of those videos, you know, you see a lot of use of force. You see agents breaking car windows right away once they stop someone. Some pointed guns and tasers at people that appeared to be cooperating. And quite a few videos also showed agents pinning people on the ground or against walls. More than half of those agents were masked, although some were not. And a lot of them did not have vests that said anything other than police.
Eva, thanks for sharing your reporting with us today.
Thank you for having me.
That's Eva Wen, investigative data reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. She analyzed the data released earlier this week by the federal government on immigration detentions in Wisconsin. Now we're joined by an immigration attorney here in the state who has a perspective on what these developments look like for the people being arrested and detained. Aisa Olivares is a partner at Eastbridge Law Group in Madison. She's also legal director at the Community Immigration Law Center. Aisa, thanks for joining us in the studio.
Thanks for having me.
We just heard the numbers there. Now, as an immigration attorney, you're talking directly with people affected. What kind of things have you heard about how ICE arrests and detentions are evolving?
I think we're hearing about an increase in different tactics and violence being used by ICE in order to execute their arrests across the state. And we see people who have no criminal history, mothers who are breastfeeding, people with disabilities, elderly individuals as well. And so the population certainly in these facilities are growing and it's diversifying to include many different sects of our community.
There's been an ongoing question about if someone is detained by immigration enforcement, do they have the right to appeal? Do they have the right to be out on bond? The U.S. Department of Justice's Board of Immigration Appeals ruled no last summer. It's still going through the courts to decide on that. What does that mean right now? If someone is detained, can they seek a bond to be released? What is involved in doing that?
Yeah, so definitely what it means for the people right now detained here in Wisconsin and in the Seventh Circuit is that people are experiencing prolonged detention. They are not necessarily eligible for bond in the way they were before September of last year when the interpretation of the law by the Department of Homeland Security changed to say, you're not eligible for bond, actually. And so you have no chance to go before an immigration judge to have them assess dangerousness and flight risk so that you can be released to your family in the interim of these proceedings. You have to go to federal court to obtain federal habeas corpus petitions in order to have a right to that bond hearing.
And now, if someone is detained, they might be in the midst of an immigration process, right? They might be in the midst of, say, an asylum filing or something like that. When they're detained, what happens to those proceedings?
So many people actually that we are seeing are in the middle of their proceedings and have done everything they're supposed to. They've checked in with ICE. They've been monitored on an alternative to detention, and they've submitted their applications. But they find themselves now in a detention facility with proceedings being expedited, possibility of not having access to your lawyer in the same way you did when you were not detained. And now the need to get together crucial evidence that's going to determine your case in just a couple of weeks.
How do you decide whether someone might be able to challenge their detention in front of a judge? And then once you start that procedure, how long does it usually take?
So we meet with individuals at the facility and we do a quick assessment about whether they would be bond eligible if they were given a bond hearing. And so we do assess eligibility for bond. There are certain things that would make you ineligible. If they're eligible, we do proceed with that federal habeas corpus petition, but we're up against the clock. The immigration judges are under a lot of pressure from the Department of Justice to move forward very swiftly with people's removal. And so oftentimes we're not getting decisions on these federal court petitions and able to get somebody released before there's a decision on their case.
Now, as we just heard from Eva, some people are detained in Wisconsin in jails, a handful of them around the state. Many others, though, are detained elsewhere in the country. Does being moved out of state create additional hurdles or barriers as people seek to be represented either for a bond hearing or for their ongoing immigration proceedings?
We are seeing people from Wisconsin transferred outside of the jurisdiction in Kansas, Kentucky, and Indiana. It means that they're farther from family. They're farther oftentimes from their lawyer or from legal representation. And the conditions vary across all of these facilities. But some of these facilities are outside of the Seventh Circuit and might have favorable case law around a bond hearing. And so what we're seeing is that we're able to move more swiftly and more quickly toward reunification of a family if they're transferred outside of the Seventh Circuit.
And you mentioned the Seventh Circuit, the regional court circuit that would deal with these cases. What's the status of legal challenges to that federal ruling that says, yeah, no, you don't have the right to seek bond?
We were hoping, because there was, some information that came down about expediting this oral argument, that we might have a decision this summer, but it's been delayed. There hasn't been a lot of movement. We are hopeful that it will come down soon and in a positive way so that people in Wisconsin will have access to bond hearings.
There had been questions at various points over the last couple of years of, if someone is detained, can we find them? Can their families know where they are? Can the attorneys, if any, connected to their case, find them? What are you seeing when it comes to that?
It can be difficult. Sometimes it takes days to find somebody. Oftentimes we're getting this information from family members because people are given a phone call and they're able to advise about where they're being taken to or where they might be transferred to. And so we really rely heavily on our families for this type of information so that we can locate people before they're inside officially of the system and try and schedule a confidential phone call so that we can speak with them about what their rights are in that facility.
Over the past decade, I think, there have been concerns, protests when Wisconsin jails enter into contracts with ICE, say, people saying, no, don't work with them. There has been an argument saying, well, hey, people are closer to home. They're closer to family, potentially. Is there a benefit to having facilities cooperate with ICE for these detentions and keep people here in the state?
I mean, of course, there's a benefit to being close to counsel and close to nonprofits that are doing the work. But unfortunately, I think any cooperation with ICE and jail space means increased detention and really facilitating the increased arrests that we're seeing here in Wisconsin.
So if ICE says, oh, we would have to transport a person elsewhere in the country, maybe that's too much bother, they might be less likely to enforce if they don't have a local detention facility?
I believe that might come into their discretion on whether or not to arrest, because there is a lot of discretion involved on the side of ICE. And we're seeing now how many more people, you know, don't have criminal convictions, how many more people are being held in the state of Wisconsin. And I think it's this cooperation that allows for that expansion.
In a situation where someone has been arrested and detained by ICE, what kind of things should be the first actions that they or their family members would take to keep in touch, to try to minimize detention time and get a fair hearing for their immigration procedures?
So I think it's important for people to know and have discussions with their family about what this could look like. Oftentimes, you are able to ask questions of ICE to make a phone call to ask them where you're being taken to so that you can share these details with your family. You're given a case number right away. That case number helps lawyers to find out where you are in the posture of your proceedings and get important information to determine whether or not you might be bond eligible.
On a legal, philosophical level, there have been arguments, does due process apply to someone in the country without a legal status? What would you say to people who say, well, there shouldn't be due process because these aren't citizens we're talking about?
Sure. So due process is part of the Constitution, and the Constitution covers people regardless of their immigration status, and it protects us from the arbitrary exercise of power by the government. And unfortunately, the mass detention and deportation agenda has significantly escalated the lack of due process for people, because they are placed into an expedited proceeding, they are in detention, and it can be really difficult to access legal representation. At a bare minimum, people facing deportation should be able to understand the proceeding against them in a language that they understand, alongside somebody who understands immigration law. And due process is an essential safeguard to our country's fundamental democratic values as we work to advance immigration policies that respect fairness, family unity, and human dignity.
Aissa, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us.
Thank you.
Aissa Olivares is a partner at Eastbridge Law Group in Madison and legal director at the Community Immigration Law Center. We also heard from Eva Wen, data reporter with the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel.